Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. James Costello is Managing Director of Label Tech Dublin, one of Ireland's largest independent producers of high-quality labels. With over 30 years' experience in the label printing industry, James has grown Label Tech into a thriving company it is today through his commitment to cutting-edge technology and investment in people. Label Tech has built its reputation on delivering innovative, sustainable and reliable labelling solutions to business across diverse industries. As a recent addition to the Asteria Group, a leading European network specialising in labels, packaging and print, Label Tech benefits from the strength and vision of a global leader. This partnership allows Label Tech to integrate local expertise with world-class resources, driving innovation and sustainability in the labelling and packaging industry. Under James's leadership, Label Tech continues to excel, contributing to Asteria's group mission of delivering value-driven, customer-focused solutions while shaping the future of the industry. James, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Aidan.
Now, you've been with the company for 30 years, right? So, but the company has been around for longer than that. So give us, to start off, give us the potted history of Label Tech.
Okay, so the business began in 1992. So I'm actually there from day one.
Right.
It was my father's idea. I was quite young at the time, just turning 21. Didn't understand the nuances of business, never mind setting up a new business and so forth. So again, thrust into a new venture. Dad passed away the following July. We set up in September 92. He died in July 93. So that was obviously a very difficult time. Mm-hmm. I suppose just on that, it's kind of perceived to be a family business, but we never really had a shot at that element of it properly, I guess. Again, I'm turning 22. We're a year in business, hit our markers, and I kind of took off from there. Invested heavily in the 90s into new technology that was introduced in 1995. We were lucky with the likes of the Windows 95 launch. Some people will remember that. We were qualified as a Microsoft second tier turnkey vendor, which allowed us to produce a lot of work for the disks. From 95 to the late 90s.
You know, there's a lot of Gen Zers out there going, what's this disk?
What's a disk? Absolutely. So, you know, the 3.5-inch floppies, as they were known at the time, which was great business for us,
yeah,
and really helped us kind of thrust forward through that late 90s period. That obviously came to an end in the early noughties. And we needed to refocus our efforts, look at different markets, and we decided then to look at the food industry, which was obviously very strong in Ireland. Fast forward another 20-odd years, and we're still one of the leading producers for food and beverage labelling in Ireland.
And is that in terms of the key customer segments? You know, if we were to break down the business today, food and beverage is big, but what else is in there now?
Well, food and beverage certainly account for 80% plus. The rest is a split between industrial, a little bit of med tech, a general, a small bit of trade and other industries. But the food and drink would be the mainstay of what we do. Gaining a lot of ground in the drink sector, particularly in the whiskey and the spirits. We do a lot of beer labelling. And that is proving very successful for us. It's a hard graft. It takes a lot of technology. Mm. Takes a lot of expertise. However, I still believe, and it's no secret, we have the best technical team in the country, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Very proud of that. And it's the team there that allow us to take on the very difficult jobs, the intricacies of new products. Every new client, every new brand needs a point of difference. Mm-hmm. And there's always a challenge. It's to push it a little bit further, go deeper, go harder, more complex, greater embellishment, And to do that, we have to have the best people in the market.
And I suppose that the idea of a label has changed. Like, you know, a label years ago isn't what a label is today in terms of both from the marketing side of it, but also from the technical and the specification side of it.
Yeah, correct. So back 20 years ago, labelling was very functional. It portrayed a message. It spoke to the consumer in at a very basic level, I guess. Now it's completely changed and it's very, very different. People do want to have a different look and feel on their product. It has to appeal to consumer in a different way. It's got to be eye-catching. You know, it may have to be sustainable depending on the application, depending on, the product, what the consumer expects from that particular brand. We've seen a bit of a change, certainly in the food sector, probably over the last 2 years. A lot of the food manufacturers are looking into the drink space. They're looking at the quality of the product, the embellishment, the kind of a premium look and feel in lots of ways, and they're now willing to dip their toe into that, look at similar tech, look at similar look and feel. So there's a little bit of a kind of crossover there, and not quite to the same extent. Mm. So you, in context, obviously, the volumes are huge on the food end, and it's a little bit more price sensitive on the supermarket shelf, and that's obviously something to be aware of too. So that's a very positive change for our business.
And then you have things like changes of regulation, or what has to appear on a label, like as most recent as the can return that now has to be a certain barcode on it that the machine knows that it's somebody has paid their 25 cent or whatever it is.
Yeah, so there's a lot of new legal requirements coming in labelling, and ultimately what that does is there's only a limited amount of space you can put a label on. So if there's more legal requirements, GDAs, nutritional information, there's more and more text now going on, which means that the space for branding, for
your message,
it's getting smaller and smaller. So therefore, the impact has to be greater in that sense. And that's just something that's not going to go away. I mean, there is new legislation in Ireland for spirits going forward that will be sold in the Irish market. And the legislation is looking for a very basic, functional, black and white Times New Roman to go on the back, which goes against a lot of the kind of good designs that are out there at the moment. And it means that drinks that are coming into the country are going to have to be relabeled at source. Again, a lot of pushback on that, but we'll see what happens in due course. So again, that's another challenge that's going to be faced by, us as label producers, as brand owners, as distillers and bottlers and so forth.
And then when it comes to the day-to-day stuff of the client relationship, is the client relationship between you much more on an operational basis with you and the company's advertising agency, or with the actual brand owner?
Okay, good question. So one of the things we've focused on heavily in the last couple of years is kind of a tripartite approach, in the sense that us, we deal with the brand owner, and then we also deal with the design agency. And what we offer now, albeit it's not something we necessarily, publicise or sell, we are quite happy to look at the design, look at the material required, look at what the brand owner expects, and try and pull all those elements together to ensure that the brand owner knows that, as the design currently sits, it could look like X. But what we might suggest, using our expertise and our team, we can maybe bring it to Y. Now, there's not a huge step there, but you've got to be, mindful of what they expect and respectful of the time and effort they've put in. So big brands, they spend a lot of money, and it's just to create maybe a softer look in a certain area, or to ensure that they're going to get exactly as they expect.
Because and also they've got to make a difference for themselves on the shelf space at the end of the day.
Correct, absolutely, yeah. So we're doing more and more press passes, we're doing more and more trials, test runs, just to give the customer really what they want. The days of, that's what the file
Said.
Those days are gone. Yeah. You know, you got to be way more mindful of what the brand owners need and expect.
Well, on that point, though, like, you know, there is and it'll be interesting in terms of the label business, you know. Customers are great at telling you what's wrong with a product, but not necessarily telling you what the solution to the problem is.
That's a fair point. But I guess they don't understand our business, naturally, to the level we do. And they will, of course, pick up, you know, issues from time to time, which we duly address. That said, it sometimes poses a positive challenge for us in terms of how we perhaps measure a colour, how we manage our presses and the press times and speeds and tooling and particular inks. So it pushes us a little bit more. So we need to raise our level to match what our customers expect. And look, that's all part of the change process. Mm. And I think if you don't buy into that, you know, you might find yourself stuck in the mud a little bit. But that's important too for us.
Yeah. I always remember I visited your premises a couple of years ago now at this stage, up in Santry, and it always I kind of had this view that I'd be going into almost like the old idea of the newspaper print and the big machines and ink everywhere, and it's the most complete opposite to that. It's almost like a surgical environment where there's just machines operating and screens everywhere and everybody knows exactly where they are.
Yeah, it's really gone through a huge change, certainly in the last 20 years, particularly with the introduction of digital print. Mm. So digital print doesn't require your traditional inks and your traditional tools to print labels as, I suppose, the conventional flexographic method would be. And also standards within the industry. We have BRC, we have a AA rating on that, which means our hygiene standards have to be very high, our health and safety standards have to be very high. We have to conform to be accredited with these standards on a yearly basis. And as a result, it just drives standards. So cleanliness is one of these standards, which, look, it just has to be better than what people would have traditionally expected. And the old print kind of, and I totally understand what you say, people expect to walk in the door and come out and check their clothes to see how much ink they've managed to bring into their car.
Are their ears still ringing from the noise that's in the place?
Absolutely,
It's so quiet.
It is. Well, I suppose it is too. I mean, we wouldn't think of it like that because we see it every day. Yeah. But people who wouldn't be familiar with the business and the industry, would have a different view on it, I guess.
When you stepped into the fray and when your dad died, you were very, very young, right? Did you go in at the helm then at that stage?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
Right.
That wasn't even on my radar. It wasn't a thought I had. I guess my reaction to that was to work hard, which I duly did. That was for me personally. That was what I had to do to kind of move through that difficult period. I didn't know how to deal with it. Look, he had a lot of ill health, so he was never going to last forever, I guess. However, that did come as a huge shock at the time. And my way of coping with that was probably work really hard, which was good. I guess I learned a lot, you know, for the next 2, 3, 4 years. Probably it was probably another 10 years before I took over kind of the MD role as such. I wasn't thinking about it. I was too busy in the day-to-day.
Yeah.
I didn't think outside of that, what was really the future. There was no plan. I mean, again, I was through my 20s, early 30s then in as MD, and I kind of thought, okay, this is slightly different. I'm going to have to take a different perspective now, a different view. I'm not just one of. I need to, I suppose, lead a team.
Mm-hmm.
How do I lead that team? What do I do? How do I get people in that are better than me at certain elements and certain aspects? You know, I know one element of the business, but there's lots of elements I don't understand, and there's better guys for that. So,
You were still very young though when you took over as MD. Did you notice any change in attitude from either customers or suppliers or things like that in terms of, he's a bit young, I'm not sure, you know, there's not enough grey hair there? The only reason I ask is we've had a couple of guests who, believe it or not, took over businesses very early on, and in some cases, within 6 weeks, their bank came into them and said, we don't think you're going to run this business. We don't want any part of it.
Okay.
Goodbye and good luck.
Okay. Okay. Right. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Again, like that. Perhaps I was a little naive in a sense. We had great support, really. Like, we were running well. We were, you know, reasonably profitable. We were constantly investing new people, new tech, new kit, new markets. Growth pattern was positive. We had good support from all our suppliers and stakeholders in that sense. And I guess too, I suppose a risk taker by nature. And I never looked at the negative. Mm. And if it was a new machine or tech that was 200 or 500, it was like, it'll be grand.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not worry about it. We've a good team, we've a good brand, we've a good name in the market. And I think I was always looking at the glass half full, absolutely 100%. And you can only deal with trouble when it comes.
Yeah.
So I was never kind of mindful of that in the sense.
But I suppose the other thing too is you did have 10 years in the company. It wasn't like you were parachuted in. So you were kind of an own entity, really.
Yes, we were.
The, you know.
Yeah. And look, we had good reserves. We had a good track record, I guess. So we were able to do lots of things that other companies and businesses may not have at the time. And constantly reinvesting.
Mm.
So that churn was a constant annually. And that was really, really important to set a very strong base for the business to allow us to do what we wanted to do going forward.
Like, the other thing you do, I suppose, when you think about it is, I said, you're 30 years in there now. Have you ever thought about or really come close to going to hell with this? I want to do something different.
it's probably too late now.
Well, yeah, I know that, yeah. But no, it's never too late.
Thanks for that, Aidan. I guess the thought has crossed my mind from time to time, but what I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I suppose I found myself in a sector that I never planned to get into.
Yeah.
Something I have thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, I've loved it. I've met amazing people, and I still do meet amazing people in Ireland, throughout Europe. Is there something different I'd like to try? I'd struggle to give you an answer, if I'm honest.
Well, obviously, I'm shag all use of that now, so.
Well, it's a bit like that, too. And I'd probably be fearful or nervous of trying something different.
Yeah.
I really would, I guess,
When you think back over the time, the what were the really hard parts of the journey? Obviously, losing your dad early on, but you know, when that ship steadied to a certain extent, going on, what were the hard times? What were the truly hard parts of the journey?
Yeah, okay. So we moved premises in 1998. We'd been in a small factory in Santry, a 5,000 square foot unit. We moved plant in 1998. We purchased a unit on Santry Avenue in the IDA industrial estate there. So we doubled in size. Very quickly, we spent money on kit. We bought two presses in kind of an 18-month period, which was the wrong move at that time.
Okay.
So we had massive capacity. You know, our third press didn't really tick. It was a great idea at the time, and we were bursting our banks with two presses. We thought this was amazing. It's never going to stop. Mm. We're going to get busier and busier. The curve is going the right direction. It's all good. We got the third press in 99. We moved premises in October Bank Holiday weekend 98 and just commissioned a new press 99. I think we took the press in winter time, quarter four. And really 2000, we were struggling to fill the machines. You know, when you're very busy, you tend not to go looking for work and expanding.
Yeah.
So,
which is the wrong thing.
Which is the wrong thing to do. Absolutely. So that was a difficult time. That was a bit of a struggle. So, and look, again, in 2007, 2008, we business dipped and price pressure came hard and fast. Mm. And that was difficult too. But look, given we were in business at that stage quite a while, we were okay. We managed through it. They were probably the two most difficult times. But even at that, Aidan, to be honest, we didn't lose any staff.
Mm.
That's a priority.
Yeah.
For us, we were looking that way. We just managed. You just cut your cloth to whatever you need to do and you go again. Yeah. And then you go again and it's, you know, round two. Right, where do we go? How do we get more work? What markets do we look at? You have to reassess. Again, I'm a huge fan of change. Yeah. Absolute change is so important with any business. If you stay still for a minute,
you're dead.
Something's going to pass you out. You know, you're just not going to be where you want to be in the next couple of years. So.
On that point, like you're 40 staff, you must have an awful lot with long legacy with the company at this stage, have you?
Yeah, a lot of guys
and
girls, in fairness, who are with me 20 years plus.
Yeah.
I met a guy there last week. So we've a small loyalty program with the staff in increments of 5 years. Mm. And I met one of our finishers who's with us 20 years. And I guess I would have said 15. Mm. But it was great, you know, and we had a bit of a chat and a handshake and so forth. And I thanked him for his service. And similarly, a girl who's with us 25 years that week too. So time does go by very quickly. Yeah. And we're very lucky in that sense. We've probably the guts of 10 people with us 20 years plus.
Okay. It's important.
It's really important. Yeah. It's really important to have that kind of loyalty, that dedication. They're very dependable. Mm-hmm. They're part of the fabric of the business. Yeah. And I think that makes my life easier because we know where we are, we know where we stand. You still got to challenge these guys as you have to challenge yourself too with changing times, with innovation and so forth. And they've been very good.
And so how would you characterise the culture in the place? And how much of it comes from you and how much is kind of just the ecosystem that it generates?
Yeah, okay. So really, from a very early days, the customer was the number one focus. So whatever happened, the customer got what the customer needed.
Yeah.
Okay, you can fight during the day for whatever reason, or you can fight at lunchtime or whatever for you know, the daily challenges that we all face. But that never, ever took away from doing a good job. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the print game, I guess it's kind of categorized as this old IR industry and, you know, it's very skill-based and so forth. And traditionally, there would have been unions and that. However, we were always a little bit different. We're probably more of a collaborative approach in terms of solving problems. Mm-hmm. That's why the staff are there such a long time. We work together. We come up with solutions. You know, sometimes we do things that I don't particularly think is right, but quite often I'm wrong. That's fine too. And you know, it goes the other way as well. That culture was, we always worked hard at delivering the right product at the right time. That was really our goal. And to ensure that our customers were happy.
It's key, really, isn't it? You know,
pretty much, yeah.
And then in that regard, do you obsess about the small things?
I used to.
Right.
I suppose my grey hair and change and time and experience. No, not anymore.
Mm.
That's a learning life thing, I guess. I would have certainly in the past obsessed with the small things. And you know what? The team are brilliant because they'll give me a little reminder.
Yeah.
I remember some years back, I rang the operations manager about a job. I was on holidays. Mm. I rang him about some job. And he politely said to me, "Stop ringing me. Mm. You're on your holidays. Okay.
And I don't need the hassle."
And I'm going to deal with it. So enjoy the pool. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's right. So they're the little things. And you have to allow the team to flourish and to do their own thing. I mean, they're experts in their field. I couldn't step in there.
Well, I was going to ask you, could you go back to the shop floor?
Well, not really, no. I tried it once for a day or two and like, Jesus
Christ. Disaster.
Well, I wasn't great, to be honest. I really
You'd have
wasn't.
You sacked yourself.
Well, I probably would have, you know. I'm not very mechanically minded and I think the guys got a bit of a laugh out of it. Really, yeah, I mean, absolutely not now. I wouldn't have an absolute clue. It's just, you know, I can point and show and tell, but, you know, implementation and actually doing
yeah,
it's
so
probably not something I could do. No, no. And that's why you have to respect these guys with the skill they have. It's incredible what they do, really is, you know, and it's a testament to our success over the years.
Yeah. And on that point then, when it comes to staffing, are you a develop from within or hire from without?
More develop from within.
Right.
And I think the reason is because over a period of time, you get to know people, you get to understand them, you get to understand their needs and wants, as well as their strengths and weaknesses. And we're a huge supporter of developing from within because we know how people react in a certain situation, their desire, where they see themselves in years to come. And quite often you get a knock on the door to say, look, I want to move up a level, I want to go to the next press or finishing unit or whatever the case may be. And that's really encouraging and that's great. So we do work with guys internally more so than we would. I suppose the pool is getting smaller externally. Really, there's less and less printers out there. there's, you know, I suppose the old kind of training Bolton Street element of it is long, long gone at this stage.
And do you think that's a major problem? And if it is, what's the solution?
I don't think it's a major problem. I do think it is an issue. But that said, I suppose the whole digitization of the print industry has changed a large section of that. Mm. That's not to take away from the skills that the guys have on the conventional sense. Look, at the moment, we've two digital presses. They've been absolutely amazing for us in the last couple of, I suppose, 20 years now we have them. The training regime there is really on the ground. Mm-hmm. It's on the press. We send the guys away to Barcelona for 2 weeks for their initial training, and that is their, that two-week period is their block of training.
Yeah.
Look, that's a certified 2 weeks. But to be very clear, you need a good 12, 18 months, 24 months on press to
with
get
people who know this.
Correct.
Stuff.
You know, getting mentored by a supervisor or a manager at a point in time to fully appreciate and to get to understand. And look, there's a level two and there's a level three and so forth. So that's very different. Back in the day, traditional printing was 4-year apprenticeships. I would suggest you could possibly do that in a year and a half to 2 years now with on-press training and on-press management. Technology has developed so much, it does make that a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But the old dog, again, is the guy who has the tricks and understands and can try a bit of this and try a bit of that and a little bit of magic and a little bit of stuff that it doesn't have in the manual. So, you know, you got to be mindful of that also. So it is easier.
Mm.
Short answer, it is easier to train people.
Yeah.
But it's getting people interested in the business.
It's a problem.
That's a challenge.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier on too that I want to come back to you on is... you know, when you step into the shoes of as you did ultimately as MD, like the role of a business owner is to wear a lot of hats, right? Mm. And there's a mistake out there. I think a lot of people think that they have to be very good at all those hats,
okay,
right? And kind of suffer on trying to be the accountant, the marketing person, the HR person, and all of this. But you, interestingly enough, picked up on the point that no. Work out what you're good at and find somebody who's better.
100%. And I still absolutely believe that that is critically important to recognise your own weaknesses.
Yeah.
So that's not a word that gets used a lot anymore, but that's neither here nor there. So at the time, I was acutely aware we needed an FD, okay? Yeah. And... Dave Keogh joined us in 2002, and that was fantastic for the business. Dave retired, so Dave took over as MD, or sorry, FD at the time, and that was really, really important. So now we had a solid base on the accounting side, and we had a brilliant FC who's still with us, Aidan, and that just took a lot of stuff. I wouldn't say off my desk necessarily, because it probably wasn't on it to start with, really.
Yeah. But it has to be done.
It has to be done. And right. we were growing at such a rate at that point in time, we needed somebody to look after that function. Mm. Similarly on the digital front. So I needed a digital manager. I wouldn't have a clue where that lands and or how to get involved in that. So we brought somebody in on that. Similarly on the marketing side. So really, I suppose my view is that you bring somebody in who's better than you in that particular field and respect that. And look, it doesn't necessarily always work out.
The job.
Of course, absolutely. So it's really about making sure that they are comfortable, they can bring value to the business, that they understand the growth pattern, what they can do, I suppose. And by the way, it's important for me to learn from them also. And that was brilliant. Dave retired early in the year. Johnny Woods joined us in 2017 as FD and partner. And again, slightly different in the sense that Johnny has more experience in the label industry and more commercially minded. I'd worked in a business in source for many years. So you're constantly looking for people that have a little bit more
that are incremental
to the business, 100%. Yeah. And again, that's been a huge element of our success over the last 7-8 years. And again, as I mentioned, I touched on the marketing and so forth, and even on the convention, the Flexo side. So we've elevated guys and promoted guys from within who've taken over that
part
department.
Of it,
our customer service manager, she's critical to the ops. So bringing all that team together, we really have, and again, going back to the people element of it, that is, and I still say it, that's the best team in Ireland, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
I know it is. And I don't just say, I don't say that lightly.
Yeah.
I'm not great with compliments to begin with. But and I mean that sincerely. And yeah. and by the way, we don't get on every day.
Yeah.
And they don't all get on with each other every day. But that's not the point. The point is, again, go back to your question about the culture. The culture is we work together and we find a solution. We get it done. It can be difficult sometimes. It can be easy other times. We just get it done. And I think that's an attractive offering for customers in the market. I think there's a wealth of experience that we have, particularly on the technical side, experience-wise. It does take a long time to understand this business. It's not your regular print game, I suspect, and I suppose that's me looking at it just from a label perspective. It's just slightly different to the other elements of print, and with that, that requires a lot of experience and know-how.
On that point, though, you know, as you think of yourself in the MD role, you know, I always think that the longer you do it, you don't necessarily get better at the job, right? But you do get quicker at making the really important decisions.
That's very true. That is very true. I think going back to your point earlier about the sweating the small stuff, you completely move them aside, and you know that's going to happen on a day to day basis.
Yeah.
So you box that off. You probably get a little bit more patient, and more accepting. More understanding, and I guess a little bit more appreciative of you know, the team's contribution and what they do. Sometimes I think as MD, you can have a very narrow focus, and it's important to maybe take a step back from time to time, which I'm not great at, but just to appreciate what really ticks along when I'm not there and when I'm not around. I don't have to be there every day. I don't have to be watching every minute. You know, it's not required. And I think probably loosening the reins a little bit is really important. Let people get on with their jobs and let them get on with what they're good at.
And let them get the idea that you have confidence in their ability.
100%. Yeah. And you have to allow
don't have
that.
Have a dog and bark yourself.
Well, that too. But at the same time, you don't want to kind of harness people either or restrict them or have too much of a say.
Yeah.
You got to let them go.
Yeah.
And look, it doesn't always work. But that's for me to deal with, you know, when that happens at a point in time. But I think that's one of the nice things about working, I think, in Label Tech. It is probably a little relaxed, is probably too strong a word. It's not as corporate-y if you want, in that context. And people are allowed.
But the success is there.
Get on with business. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's another one, I suppose, you know, as you get bigger and you get more successful, and this, I think, really does apply to the Label Tech or the labeling business. Is there a risk that innovation falls, the level of innovation falls as you get bigger and bigger and you're just kind of going boom on? And if so, how do you stop that?
I don't think innovation will fall based on the changes and the modernization of the last 20 years. It's getting tighter and harder to become completely innovative at the top. And I suppose we need to be at that all the time. It's all the little things. It's the little things and it's those marginal gains that create a point of difference for us. And it, you know, there's no massive, huge, big new technology that's going to take over the label business. That's not going to happen. I suppose for us, it's just, and look, that's part of my role, to ensure that we're at the cutting edge of technology, that we're aware of what goes on in Europe. And you know, just on that point, I mean, Ireland is a very small market, as you well know in your business. We're on the edge of Europe. I mean, the economic wave, certainly for us, in lots of ways, is always behind. We're a month or 3 months behind what's going on in Europe. And unfortunately, that tends to be in a negative sense, you know, when there's the supply issue.
We're at the end of the channel.
We could be sitting here in October going, Jesus, things are great. And Europe are saying, oh my God, it's disaster here. And then come January, as did happen with us in 22, come January, it was like, oh my God, someone turned the lights off. So back to your point on the innovation is that, you know, we need to be aware of what's going on in Europe, about the technology advances, about the innovations, and just to stay that little bit ahead. The challenge for us as a smaller business, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, the tech could be very expensive. So as a result, it's harder for us to invest in it, I suppose, to justify it. Our runs tend to be smaller. So how do we, you know, how do you...
Optimise that.
How do you optimise? How do you buy, you know, a 30 million... £100 striker. You know, when you can't really go there because you just don't have the resources to do that. To use, you know, kind of a football analogy, but that's okay because we've kind of cut our cloth to suit our measure in lots of ways, and we've ensured that we're probably have a kind of a niche in the market that suits what we can do and the team we have and the tech we have.
Okay. Now, switch, I suppose, and that leads us nicely into becoming part of the Asteria Group.
Yeah.
Right. So, why and why now?
Okay. So, I suppose first to say that the business wasn't up for sale.
Right.
Okay. That was never an intention. Bit of a backdrop. We had 2 strong years COVID. We had a major paper crisis throughout Europe in 22, which kind of fell into 23. Challenging times. Kind of cleared itself at the end of 23, and we were kind of back to normal business now, I guess. I was approached by Yves de Klerk, who's the CEO of the Asteria Group, in June 23. Bit of a chat, informal, kind of a get together, and he expressed an interest in us. I was, you know, delighted and complimented and the usual. Again, not on my radar at all. A very good guy, a label guy. You know, had a
knows the business,
knows the business. So kind of a similar story in the sense that his father had set up a business in Belgium in the '80s. He had gone into the business. He was now managing the business, and then had kind of from 2017, I think, started acquiring businesses around Europe. So a kind of a bit of a similar story to myself. Very personal guy. Got on well, and I suppose that probably opened my mind up to a potential maybe at a point in time. Fast forward 12 months, we sold the business to the Asteria Group in May of this year. Again, it probably took 12 months to really decide that this was the right move for us. So why did we sell the business? I guess one of the reasons was lack of succession. I was about to say succession, but lack of succession. Yeah. So, you know, my lads are not going to be involved in the business. They're 23 and 20. My daughter's 16, so she's a little bit younger in that sense. And I did tell them a number of years back there wouldn't be jobs for them. And I didn't mean that in a restrictive way or to be mean. I kind of felt that I wanted them to paddle their own canoe. I think I was mindful of the print business. It's a very old type of, and has that very old industrial tag
on it.
And the jobs that they may look for, I may not even be able to relate to or understand. I mean, the business world moves on so quickly. So I suppose in a sense that, and look, and just to caveat that, if they did come into the business, at what point would they come in? Would they go cut their teeth elsewhere? Would they go down the financial route? Would they go down the commercial route? Would they come back? At what point would that be? Would that be 10 years from now? You know, I would have to naturally stay there.
Yeah.
And would I allow them to flourish? Honestly, probably not. And I'd probably struggle with that, and I'd probably be all over them like a rash. And I said to myself, that's not fair on them. And it's not right for me to do that.
It's probably not right for the business.
And it's not right for the business.
Yeah.
So I really, that was one.
Yeah.
I guess I think we also needed a bit of an energy injection. I think we didn't necessarily plateau, but we needed to move to the next level. So we became a big fish in a small pond, I guess.
Yeah.
There are obviously multinationals around the country, but we were the biggest independent on the island. And we were probably just reaching the top of where we could go ourselves, and we needed a bit more scale. We needed a broader reach, a little bit more expertise. And I think that too was probably part of the reason, I guess. I like the people. Johnny and I went to Belgium, and we visited about 6 or 7 sites in June or July 23, and I was really surprised to see these businesses that had joined the Asteria Group over the previous 5 to 7 years. Good people. They were running their businesses as they had, to a point. They'd all remained. They maintained their brand, they kept their identity, their locations, their management teams. Nothing had really changed, so I like that. And one really important element of joining the group was to ensure that the team were looked after, mm-hmm. that the team were comfortable. There's no point joining a group to discover that all of a sudden your team are not happy.
Civil war breaks out.
So why would you what's the point of that? Yeah. That's a failure in my eyes, right? But that was really, really important for me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that the team were comfortable. And I was nervous about that. And I was slightly concerned that some of them might say, you know what, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we're 6-7 months on now. There's very little change. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we report now to Belgium. We've massive support. Our network is huge. It's an exciting time and has just given us a little bit of an injection
of energy.
Yeah. And I think we just needed that. So mm-hmm. the timing just happened to be right.
Yeah.
It just happened to be right.
And for you then, what changes for you? Like, you've gone from a situation where the book stops at you. Mm. Now the book, it sort of stops at you, but it actually has another little leg to go on.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a few slips there. Nothing major, really. I guess, you know, here in the past, it was like, yeah, right, let's do it. We're good, let's go. And now there's certain times you just got a sense check and go, actually, hang on. Do we need to run this up the flagpole?
Yeah.
And that's fine. Yeah. I suppose, look, it does take a bit of getting used to. You know, we had the odd, would you give us a ring in the future?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
But look, you know, the group has 34 sites around Europe.
Okay.
You know, we're the latest addition and proud to say that and delighted to be part of the Assyria group. This is not their first rodeo.
Yeah.
So,
They've cut their teeth in this a few times.
They've done this many times before. We won't be the first. We won't be the last to have a slip from here to there. But in that sense, very supportive.
Mm.
And very good, very professional.
And you feel there's a potential going forward to be more collaborative with those 33 other sites around?
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt. Yeah, 100%. Like, we visited a few sites already.
Okay.
We had our annual get-together in the Netherlands in September, which is hugely beneficial. Mm. We did a little bit of presentation, introduced ourselves to the team. We met all the MDs and FDs around Europe. It's a very collaborative approach, which is exciting for us. So we will, in 25, we'll send the team to various sites around Europe. They'll pick up bits and pieces. No doubt we'll have visitors to our site. They'll pick up bits and pieces also. And that's what creates a point of difference, is when you can collaborate with a guy in Spain or France or Belgium or the Netherlands, and we see they're doing something slightly different. And, you know, we can try that. And that's something we can offer our client base also.
And potentially, too, it opens up the potential for a wider customer base for you, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. No. And in fairness, we're actually currently working on something with two other sites in Europe. Hopefully we'll bring us business in 2025. That would not have happened before now. We wouldn't have been even considered. So there's a little bit of that happening, and we've had a few approaches from customers to say, look, I've seen you've joined the group. Mm-hmm. You know, we deal with their sites in the UK or elsewhere. Can we talk to you?
Okay.
And that was a surprise. Yeah. I didn't think that would happen.
Right.
And look, that's been very beneficial too. So that brings a little bit of, again, back to the energy. a little bit more business. So we're looking positively forward for 2025 and beyond.
What gets more credit for your success? Work, a luck or hard work?
Oh, both.
Yeah, take both every time.
Yeah, you need a bit of both. Yeah. Look, I think certainly lucky with the team. Dare I say it, touch wood, anybody we've gone after has joined us.
Mm.
And we've had a few people want to come to join us. We're probably a little bit lucky there in that sense.
Yeah.
Definitely hard work.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. I know that's a bit of a cliche. You work hard, blah, blah. It's true.
Yeah.
You just have to be constantly working. So
put yourself in the right positions.
Put yourself in the right. Look, if you keep trying and trying and trying, eventually something's going to drop for you, which it invariably does. But definitely a combo.
Yeah. And then has fear of failure ever been a driving factor for you?
Yeah, it has, I guess. I think back earlier when I was saying about taking chances and that, it's very important to succeed. You know, if you're going to promise on something, I think it's critically important to deliver, or at least be able to deliver and have the tools to do that. I suppose maybe to a smaller element than I think in some respects, failure was never an option, I guess, but it was certainly has to be a little bit of a driving force just to make sure we get it over the line. And look, I do know there's been on more than one occasion I've been reminded by Johnny that you know we took on a lot in the last 7 years before the sale to Asteria, and but okay, that was a sense check. And I guess, you know, from a financial perspective, sometimes the outlook is just a little bit on the conservative side, whereas I'm probably the opposite side. So you just need that little bit of somebody keeping an eye and making sure that we're staying between the ditches, you know.
So on that basis then, do you hate losing or love winning?
Oh, Jesus. I hate losing. Oh, yeah. Man. But I love winning.
The amount of people that answer one way and they go, oh, but actually, you know what, I love winning.
Yeah, and you know what, I probably hate losing more, and I don't celebrate the wins enough. And I guess, I don't know if that's an Irish thing or that's me. I kind of, you know, I think it's when you win, it's, you kind of go to the next one.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't take stock and you don't go, do you know what?
That was great.
That was a great day.
Yeah.
And we have a little celebration or whatever it happens to be at a point in time. And definitely one of my weaknesses, I just don't, you know.
Don't celebrate the wins.
Don't celebrate the wins enough.
Yeah. And in tie with that then, what's the hardest job as MD?
I suppose managing people.
Is it?
Yeah. I think managing people is very challenging. I think you have to be respectful and mindful of everybody's different.
Mm.
And I know people often ask about management styles, and it's fine to pick one or two. I can't remember how many there are now. There's probably the guts of 16, I think, now at some point in time. You got to respect everybody. Everybody has a different skill set and a different need and a want. And I think to be mindful of that, and without getting too woke, I hate that word, you know, the challenges that people have, be it in work, be it in their personal lives, you have to kind of bring all that together and make sure that we can, A, give them what they want, B, they can give us what we want, and we can work together well. Definitely the hardest part, definitely the hardest part. Because there's so many challenges out there that we're not aware of that people have to deal with. And that does reflect in their work. Not always, but it can do. And that's hard. And I don't mean that in a negative sense or a disrespectful sense to the team. It's just broader.
Yeah.
It's years ago, it was about a stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very little carrot and loads of stick. You know, those days are gone. Yeah, it's neither, really.
Yeah.
And I think that will probably take up a lot of time. But again, that's, you know, we have a lot of people.
Your assets
there
walking in and out the door every day.
Correct. 100%. And look, our strength is our people and our technology, and I'll put the people first.
Yeah.
Because they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Without either or both, we've no business.
Business, exactly.
So that's really where it lies.
Yeah.
So, and that, again, back to the loyalty, commitment, longevity, you know, our loyalty program that we recognise people are there for many, many years' service. And that's why, my guys, we do that, you know.
What advice would you give to young people today?
Good question. What advice would I give young people? I guess, you know, I was going to say, you know, to follow what you enjoy or you know, do what you love. It's easy to say that 30 years later in the business. You know, I would say don't expect too much of yourself. Okay? And don't nail your colours to the mast too early. Unless you're absolutely sold on definitive on a particular route. I remember years ago being at a kind of a label conference delegation. It was probably 30 or 40 of us in a room. And the guy who was giving us a tour of the plant said, look, quick Q&A as an intro, bit of a warmer upper. Hands up, people who studied science. A lot of hands went up. But bear in mind, these are all label people. Hands up who studied, you know, finance. Hands go up and so forth and a few different areas. Hands up who intended to get into the label game. No hands went up. So, you know, that for me was really interesting because nobody had ever intended to land in the spot.
They're all accidental labellers.
Well, they are. So, you know, just, I suppose, keep an open mind and be happy with yourself and the decisions you make. And if it doesn't work out, I mean, reset and go again. I think it can be too defined. Mm. Let's not get too defined, because you never know where you're actually going to end up. Look, again, I suppose a hard question to answer. If I think about my own guys, my own kids, I'd say, are they happy with what they're doing? If they are, keep doing that. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
As long as it's legal.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Very important.
Just our rider we just put in.
Yeah. I mean, look, do whatever that is, you know, and let's not be, I suppose, too expectant or too pushy on them. I mean, you know, I would not like to be starting out again. Yeah. I really wouldn't. I mean, maybe that's just an age thing, and because I can't relate to 30 years ago, or 30 years ago now. Yeah. They probably don't think of it that way. Of course, why would they? No. I mean, we were all like that at one stage. So, a tricky one.
Mm. How important have personal networks or business/personal networks been over the 30 years?
Very important. Mm. Very important. And I think maybe not necessarily, well, I suppose a little bit on the customer side, on the mentoring side, critically important. I've reached out to a lot of people over the years. That's how we have our team. Mm. You know, people who have been directors of the business over the years and retired and so forth have come through networks. Mm. There's never been, you know, a man or woman landed in fresh from...
Yeah, that didn't know. With a CV. It wasn't a known commodity of some sort.
No, absolutely not. No, yeah. No. So I did use that a lot, particularly when things were difficult, because, you know... Even for a chat or a coffee or a, you know, maybe a beer, and you kind of let them know where you're at and how you feel and where the challenges lie or difficulties that are going on within the business. And it's been amazing. You know, we've had some rough times. We go back to 2007, 2008, and I know we had to rejig a couple of things just to get us right. But we reached out to people and we met guys that we didn't know previously, weren't aware of their skill set, what they did, but there's always somebody somewhere that can give you a solution and help you.
And as an industry, I know it's a very competitive industry, but as an industry, is there a kind of a network in there that you'll meet lads and you might meet them maybe only once a year and you have a cup of coffee and a chat and things like that, or is it very much the competition lines and go, well, I'm not telling you it, and you know.
Well, funny you should say that. So. I've been connected to various things in Europe over the years with councils and so forth, and I've met a lot of guys from Europe and the UK, and it's very collaborative. Like in France, for example, they have a label federation, and they meet once they have an annual get together and an annual conference, and everybody goes and they celebrate and they mingle. There's none in Ireland.
Right.
I don't think there ever has been. I think there's a little bit of old school competition line. I think that's softened over the years. I know in the UK they have the BPIF. Again, that's a bit of a, not necessarily a collaboration, but it's an association that's reflective of the members and the print sector. Again, I think we're a bit back to, it's my field, a little bit. And you know what? There's so much to gain. Now, that said, and just to qualify that, I mean, I could bump into my competitor tomorrow. We will have a coffee.
Yeah.
Now we should there and we'll have a chat and absolutely no problem there. But in terms of an
industry formal thing.
Yeah, it never really took off. Yeah. And I think despite efforts probably 10, 15 years ago, it didn't really draw the people in.
Right, we come to the final question.
The black book.
The black book.
Oh my
God. The sticker is off. Right.
Give me an easy one, Aidan. Come on.
All right. This will be an interesting one, right? Mistakes can happen in business. What are the greatest lessons you have learned tackling mistakes?
Look, massive learnings through mistakes. Do not do that again is you know, obviously number one, sticks out a mile. I have a slightly different perspective on that. I think mistakes are critically important.
Okay.
I think they're really important because without them, you won't learn. And if you feel that you can't, won't, shouldn't make mistakes, maybe you're not the guy.
Yeah.
I think you have to be open to it, not with an intent, of course.
Yeah, it's not the making of them, it's the learning from them.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. But really, really important. And listen, I wouldn't say daily, but we've clients from time to time. And in fairness, but you know what? You know what's great? You say to a customer, listen, Aidan, I'm really sorry, but we're after making a mess of that.
Yeah.
And invariably the customer goes, fair enough, and thanks for that, but this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to fix it,
yeah.
And this is when we're going to fix it. There's all your answers. Is that going to work for you?
As a customer.
Yeah, and the customer goes, listen, maybe a bit peed off, really appreciate your honesty, thanks for that, and yes, that's going to work for me. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think it does. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, James Costello. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, or comment if you enjoy what you heard. Many thanks, and we'll see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy, and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.